All right, call this meeting of Lincoln County Board of Commissioners to order. This is Wednesday, August 1st, and this is the meeting immediately following the joint work session that was just concluded with the City of Celeste City Council. First item on our agenda is to establish a quorum. We have all three commissioners present. Next item is adoption of the consent calendar. These are items of a routine nature, items that have come before us before. I'll entertain a motion, or commissioners may
move to adopt the consent calendar as presented.
Second.
If you wish. Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. Next item is a decision item on designating a newspaper for publication of the 2018 Lincoln County foreclosure list. Council Belmont.
Commissioners, as we do annually, we solicit proposals from the local newspapers to publish this particular list, and the quotes are included in your order here. The recommendation is to go with the Newport News Times, which is cheaper on both if it's 2 pages, 3 pages, or 4 pages.
And again, the bids are for 2, 3, or 4 pages, but depending on how many foreclosures there are, we'll determine which bid is exercised.
Exactly. That's correct. Okay.
I would move for approval of this order designating the Newport News Times as the newspaper for publication of the 2018 Lincoln County foreclosure list.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That motion carries. All right. Next item is commissioner reports. Commissioners.
And I met with ODFNW, Director of the Marine Division, today and had a good meeting talking about different fisheries issues and developing. And, there's a meeting next week, I forget the exact day, on the halibut season for next year and the rockfish season for next year, which is a huge issue for the sports industry.
I spent this afternoon at Salshan Lodge with a group of directors of community action agencies around the state, including our community action agency, Community Services Consortium, and also with a group from Oregon Housing and Community Services. One of our big victories on housing and homelessness in the last legislative session was getting emergency funding to assist individuals and families dealing with homelessness, doubled from $20 million to $40 million for the biennium. But now there has to be some real, I guess, relationship building, trust building, because Oregon Housing administers the money, but the community action agencies actually distribute it. And kind of finding the ground rules to make sure that this extra money is really spent effectively, but yet without burdening local agencies with too much paperwork and red tape to prevent them from actually getting the job done. So it was a very interesting and enlightening discussion, and again, I got to watch both from my perspective as somebody who's been involved with community action for a long time and now also a member of the Housing Stability Council, which oversees the work of the state agency. So I was kind of on both sides of the fence at once.
So, can I ask a question here? So, are we looking at, we're talking about doubling it, but is there any discussion about specific jobs yet the money goes to?
It doesn't go for jobs, and it's already doubled, Commissioner. It's direct services. And like for instance, if somebody comes into the CSC office in Newport or Lincoln City or in the other counties, and they're eligible, and maybe they're going to get into an apartment, but that apartment isn't going to be available for a month. CSC can put them up in a motel for a month so they can, say, not be living in their car any longer. So it's not creating any jobs, but it's adding to the funding for direct services to people in need.
My question to that is, how do you administer double the amount of money with the same manpower?
Well, you know, that's going to be a challenge, and I think it's going to differ. And, you know, the answer in Malheur County is going to be different from Multnomah County, going to be different from Lincoln County. But a lot of the agencies, at least the initial messages, is like CSC, this money always runs out before the two-year state budget cycle is over. So what they're saying is, they're not going to need any more staff. They're just going to hopefully keep the people working on this throughout the two-year budget cycle, or at least a greater share of it. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting the legislature, you know, the people I talked to said that this is now kind of one of the top issues on everybody's radar. So they've committed this money, but they're expecting results. So the conversation today was, how do we really follow through and deliver the best results we can?
Quantify what's been accomplished.
Yep.
All right.
Just, can I do one quick update? And just to cover this, because we couldn't get this on the agenda for a couple of things, but late last week, the County Fire Defense Board made a declaration that actually banned burning throughout the entire county, including all the cities in the county. And it was a little bit different kind of burn, because the burn bans that are sort of in place in other locations really deal with outdoor kind of burning, but they would allow things, let's say, you know, campfires on some occasions, or charcoal barbecues, those kinds of things. This is the first time I've seen this ban, that the Fire Defense Board actually came in and said they're banning all burning for everything except for basically propane grills.
Control it without turning.
Valve turning grills at this point. And I think the news is out there pretty widely in the community, but I just wanted to note that the county does actually participate with the Fire Defense Board in these particular determinations. The Fire Defense Board covers all the cities, and this is the fire chiefs, and then all the rural fire protection districts. But there are a number of areas, especially rural East County, that are outside of fire districts or cities out there, and that's where the County Board of Commissioners comes into play on this particular thing. And we'll see where this goes. Obviously, it's a extremely dry conditions throughout the county, and we've seen what's happened in other parts of the state with the fire danger. It's an elevated fire danger at an early period as I've seen in a long time. And that also brought up, and I don't know if there's anybody from Gibson Farms. Probably not tonight. I thought they might show up here to talk a little bit. But there is potentially some interest in looking at, and I think they're looking at this statewide, a declaration of drought for significant areas of the entire state. Right now, it's very interesting. I was doing some research anticipating we might have a request and need to do some stuff. And it looks like there's only four or five counties that actually have the governor has declared drought conditions. But you know, what's happened over the course of the last few months, and I do have a copy for you, and I wanted to at least share this with you, of the Oregon Water Conditions Report, the latest version, which came out July 30th, just to get you very recent. And it was really interesting. I put my version with my notes on it here. And just turn your attention really quickly to pages 8 and 9. There's a great deal of information here. I unfortunately didn't get an opportunity to talk to the Drought Council. I was kind of curious. They have a meeting on August 9th, their next meeting of the Drought Council. That's the group that makes recommendations to the governor to do the declarations. I have a sneaky feeling that they've got a number of additional counties they're going to be making a declaration for. I don't know what. But you can see some of the things that they're talking about, where we stand as a state and a county with the U.S. Drought Monitoring Service. The kind of stream flow issues they're looking at in terms of what's going on, precipitation, temperatures. It's kind of interesting that a lot of the stuff, especially for some reason, the coastal strip's not included in it. I don't understand that why, but they're not monitored, but there is other information in here. And I looked on pages 8 and 9. I thought those were very interesting. As you look at the specific kinds of, and they talk about abnormally dry, moderately dry, severely dry, extremely dry, and exceptionally dry. That's the standards they use for doing these determinations. And you can see where Oregon is as of July 24th, 2018, but compare that to where we were on August 1st of 2017. Interesting information. Yeah. The other thing I did want to bring to your attention is I was able to find out the drought declarations that the governor has done since 1991. Interesting. And what I found that was sort of very interesting to me is only twice in that period of time has Lincoln County been included in the drought declaration. And on both occasions, it was not at the request of the county. It was actually done by the state, and they did numerous counties. So they would take, like, the basically west of the Cascades and do a declaration. And that was in 2015 and then in 1992. But since 1991, that's the only two drought declarations that have actually reached into Lincoln County. I thought that was interesting information.
Mr. Chair, if I could, a question from Council Belmont. I wasn't sure the exact request from Gibson Farms. Were they asking us as a Board of Commissioners to declare a drought or to make a request to the state to declare a drought in Lincoln County?
The process is works this way. There is a process. We actually have some steps. This is, normally goes through emergency management, so normally you'd have the emergency manager here doing this particular activity. I'm stepping in because, as you're aware, she's been actually out assisting on a number of fires throughout the state and then was at some training. I caught her in her car just a few minutes before the meeting. She luckily has a speakerphone on her car. And she said, you know, I couldn't make it to the meeting here, but we've gone through and looked at the process for doing it. I hadn't looked at the drought stuff for ages. I wasn't really sure, but one of the ways you can initiate it, lots of times the state will make it, and the state makes the final determination. The governor actually does the drought order. But a county can declare a disaster in its county, like you would any other emergency, and make a request to the governor to declare a drought. And I've actually, just in anticipation that we might want to discuss that further, prepared a draft order declaring a local disaster and request for a drought emergency, and then the letter that you do to send off to the state. I'm actually thinking that what you might want to do is send the letter without, and I've crafted it in such a way that you don't have to include the resolution. It really puts it on the radar of the state that we're concerned about the conditions here and what that means, and then do some more research and get some more information between now and August 9th to see whether or not we really need to do an order making a declaration.
So we could do the declaration at our August 8th meeting, which would end transmit it to Salem.
Yeah, nothing's going to be done by the state before August 9th. So even if we were to request one, nothing would be done.
So let me see if I understand this right. Gibson Farms has had its water removed from the Celeste River as water rights.
Right.
And they need that to finish irrigating the blueberries.
That's my understanding.
And then what it does, if you get this, then they can go to a senior water right that somebody else owns and use that for the irrigation.
I have not researched the water rights issues. I don't really know that. Apparently what has happened is it's not unusual to get a notice to haul junior water rights in the Celeste. That's actually something that probably occurs on an annual basis. The difference here, as I understand it, is the timing. They have not had this kind of notice from the Oregon Water Resources Board this early in the year.
I believe their email said 80% of their blueberry crop is still on the vine.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'd certainly be in favor of
so maybe if you wanted to do anything, maybe the consensus to do the letter, I drafted a letter for you, we could send that off at this point while we do more examination of this whole issue. And I apologize, I got kind of had to look at this at the last minute this afternoon. I was the only one available to look at it. So
doing the letter doesn't prohibit us from taking stronger action whenever we need to.
Right, but and it puts it, what it does do is put it on the radar of the Health Council. So if there's a consensus to do that, I will supply you with a letter. I think there may be a copy in the packet.
Great. Oh,
you can use this one.
Okay, I'll sign it. Let's see, any other reports from the other commissioners? I'll report that I did make it back in time from the meeting in Salem on the maritime sector strategy effort that I started some 2 years ago. I think Commissioner Thompson actually first brought it to my attention. But we actually have an organizational meeting to talk about how we were going to convene the task force that was approved by the state legislature last year. There is a report due to the governor September 15th. And it may be a report that says we're organized, but there were representatives from Lane County workforce area, from Northwest Works, which is where I chair, and we're going to include the workforce representative from South County. And it's an effort to address really four issues. The first one we've accomplished, that was getting the legislature to pass a bill that says we need to figure out the value of the maritime sector to our state and recognize the fact that maritime workers oftentimes work in Oregon but don't live in Oregon. And second of all, to get the State Employment Department, and that's who we met with today, to gather data that quantifies the value of the maritime sector and looks at it from an employment standpoint. Third item is to develop curricula with our community colleges and certainly the Marine Science Center or OSU at their Marine Initiative, Marine Studies Initiative. And so develop curricula so that there are educational programs available to people that are interested in advancing in the maritime industry. And the fourth thing is to develop job training programs through our workforce investment boards so that there's educational opportunities and job training opportunities. So it's nice to at least get a first meeting going toward the first meeting of the task force. Commissioner.
I started on this and because of my experience in the ocean industry, and I found out that they said we only created like two jobs out in the coast, and there's a problem here. And we met with the community colleges, and the problem was identified to be much worse than I thought because we didn't have fill the criteria and actually evaluate us. They weren't getting the money to do the training, yet there was all these jobs. And so I stepped back because he has the skills and workforce and has carried forward to do his job. But the ultimate goal is so there'll be more money to flow down through the pipeline so that these people can get trained and identified so that the state actually can advance. Because as we're developing not only our maritime industry, but if you haven't noticed the amount of increase in research vessels and things like that, there's a lot of jobs that aren't being filled by even state of Oregon residents. They're all coming out of Washington and other parts of the United States that have this type of workforce development that we don't have. So it creates us jobs in the long run if we can get this done right.
And hopefully with I was going to say, hopefully with a task force report, that'll be a strong justification to the state to provide more money to meet those needs. So. Good work there. All right, anything else from commissioners? All right, this is the opportunity for constituent input. You're welcome to address the Board of Commissioners on any subject of interest. We ask you to limit your comments to 5 minutes. I think you all know that, or many of you do. And commissioners may or may not respond. We'll let Maria go first, and then I know we have others. There's as good as any spot, wherever you're comfortable.
Okay. Oh, okay. I'm here to talk about what I have found out meantime in studying about the application of biosolids on different kinds of land. And first of all, I'd like to say that we mean Lincoln County Community Rights. We will never tire of stating that use of toxic substances on people and their environment and on ecosystems and the life they contain are violations of people's right to safety and to life itself, and of nature's right to exist, persist, and to renew its cycle. We are part of nature and all the life it makes possible, all to it, the life it makes possible for us. That being said, what follows here are some highlights of an article on sludge application to land that comes to us from Cornell University. The study defines the goal of sewage treatment as cleaning up the water. The contaminants in water are removed from the water and concentrated in sludges. 90% of the dioxins removed from water end up concentrated in sludges. The same happens with parasites. This helps in providing cleaner water as an effluent from the plant, but it makes beneficial use of the sludges more difficult. Since 1993, the list of regulated contaminants has been decreased with the elimination of chromium. To that list, the EPA is planning to add regulation of coplanar PCBs and dioxins and furans in the next several years, although a list of 31 contaminants was being considered for addition to this. Without a very good understanding of pathways and processes allowing pollutants to reach calculated maximum acceptable values is unwise. as our understanding of impacts increases, maximum acceptable values will be lowered. For example, standards for lead have been decreased over the years. Our knowledge of hormone disruption impacts at low chemical concentrations is increasing. Once this has occurred, soil contamination is difficult to remediate. The EPA is ignoring contamination from different pathways simultaneously. The risk assessment did not attempt to address the ways in which the effects of exposure to multiple chemicals simultaneously can affect the toxicity impacts. Our very limited knowledge of how different contaminants may interact is one reason for skepticism regarding risk assessment and for the use of a more conservative approach. Children ingest some soil as part of their normal behavior. They stick their hands in their mouths, they touch dirt, etc. There is concern that the regulatory limits based on the existing 200 milligrams a day soil ingestions, which would be the size of a little aspirin, may not be conservative enough to protect children who may be exposed, particularly in a home garden scenario. A particular crop may be highly sensitive or accumulate metals more, may be grown on a particular site, which may have soils that result in high uptake of contaminants by the crop. Different assumptions regarding the appropriate uptake coefficient to use for cadmium in calculations for a home gardener applying sludge and eating crops result in very different allowable cadmium levels in sludge. Contaminants found in 10% or fewer of sludges determined by a 1988 survey were not considered significant enough to regulate. However, in up to 1 of 10 sludges, these contaminants may be present and possibly at levels of concern.
Okay, you're getting close to 5 minutes.
So. I am. I'll never finish here.
Okay.
Maria, can you make sure just to give us
the information?
If you this is just a synopsis, but I can send you the link to the whole article.
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. I'll take both.
Okay. I'm going to skip here. No organic contaminants are currently regulated. PCBs are no longer being regulated. They may persist in the soil for 20 years after application of sludge. A number of organic contaminants that are components of detergents are found in high levels in sludges. These are varying toxicity and in how degradable they are. But some are suspect regarding hormonal mimicking actions. Little is known about the extent to which sewage sludges are contaminated with radioactivity, and monitoring is not being required. Individual sludges receive wastewater from nuclear facilities, hospitals, and other medical facilities, and leachates from Superfund sites with radioactive contaminants. EPA risk assessment of water contamination is meant to protect a shallow well immediately down gradient of a sludge field. The calculation assumes a large reduction of peak metal concentrations by the time that leachate reaches the well. The potential for leaching of metals has been demonstrated. In undisturbed soils, channels created by worms and roots and other processes provide for rapid downward water movement that can limit chemical interactions between the percolate and the soil and therefore allows more percolate to reach our rivers.
Can you try to wrap it up, please?
It's just high pH can actually increase the solubility of some organically complex metals. There's concern for the quality of surface water in the vicinity of sludge application sites. And the APA's risk assessment assumptions are unrealistic. The EPA's choice is not protective of smaller streams in agricultural areas. Appropriate use of sludges has positive effects on plant growth through addition of nutrients and organic matter. Excessive accumulation of certain metals, such as copper, zinc, and nickel, reduces crop yield.
Okay, Maria, you're running way over time, and it's not
okay.
Fair to the other people.
I'll just stop, and anybody who would like a copy of the article can
have
one.
Please send a copy to us. We appreciate that. And
we'll a copy of the synopsis also?
Sure. Yes, both.
Sure.
Okay.
And then for the record, would you identify yourself?
I am Maria Sauce, and I live on Fruitvale Road, which belongs to Newport, and I'm a member of Lincoln County Community Rights that brought you the measure 21177 last year.
Okay, thank you. You want to, if you give that material to Christy right behind you. Is that your only copy?
No, I have another one in my computer.
All right, then we'll copy it, make sure it's part of our record and reference the links. Thank you. Next, who else would like to address the Board of Commissioners? We'll start out for the record. Please identify yourself.
My name is Alan Davis, Logson, Oregon. I've been with commissioners. We've been working with you for three, going on four months now. We know how to call the biosolids. There's all the current information and everything. And so what we need to do, especially the sluts where you're stocked up, like 4 years or something, before you re-clean out your clarifiers, We started contacting Thomas Mailer, who is a PhD in microbiology, and David Lewis, who is a microbiology biologist for the EPA, senior advisor of Toby Ford. He got fired because of the whistle on the EPA falsifying documents and client. And also Richard Arndt, who's a chemist. Well, I've looked in different ways to do this. The best way is called plasma gasification. It takes out 90% of the toxins compared to, I believe you had somebody talk to her last week about aerobic centrifuges. It only takes out 50%. And so maybe a joint venture, because the cool thing about this, you can use the oil and gas to power generators to power your town. They're currently using this in Arlington, Oregon. Seattle and Portland brings their waste down there to do it. We're also doing it in Ottawa, Canada, Tokyo, and also Boise, Idaho, with really good success. And I've checked into this. The U.S. Department of Treasury, this is where yours, Doug, American Reinvestment Act, they said you can file for loan guarantees and programs for the feds. And this is something you know about. I don't know nothing about this. But this is a better way to do away with these biosolids, a lot safer. When it's done, it leaves a carbon block, which is, England's right now looking to make textiles and bricks out of it. So in my opinion, for that, we could almost do with all of it and not have to clean Sluts River. This is the newest way they're doing biosolids right now. And one more thing, the stubble across, which is very concerning. All this, it's called polyfluoroalkyls. It's a plastic. It comes from carpeting, apparels, industrial wrapping, firefighting foams, metal platings. It has smaller blood samples than all U.S. general populations have been checked. It's leached in through biosolids. It's a bioaccumulator. It increases the concentration of your blood and organs in times, causes numerous types of diseases. And you can almost guarantee it's probably in the Sluts River because the EPA did 97. Percent tests, and it came into all 97% of them. It was going to release this, but due on, I believe it's on, let me look at this, my eyesight's bad, the 14th of June, but it's blocked by Scott Pruitt, head of the EPA, AIDS, because it'll be a public relations nightmare. I've been pleading with the EPA for help. That's where I say the contamination is so widespread, the chemicals are found in everybody. Nearly every water system that they've tested. They've also found out that actually it should be rated a lot lower than what the EPA says it is, because it's been done for the a group of called ConcernedSciences.org, also did a study for this. They said it's far more toxic than what the EPA says it is to our bodies. And basically that's all I have to say. You know, it's, you know, biosolids are really bad, and there's no, it's in, I'll blend more gingerly to the planet really quick. Yeah, we got so much stuff here. It's United States Geological Study. Wastewater treatment is effective at removing a portion of the chemicals from incoming waste. However, some chemicals are not removed, but instead absorbed into biosolid materials. When biosolids land applied as fertilizers, the potential exists for chemicals to run off the land surface to local surface waters. This is a 2017 study. I think I told you before. So there's no escaping it. You know, we really need to have that river tested, you know, for our children and our children's children. And it's really crucial we do this as fast as possible, especially as coral flap goes in it. It's in all our blood systems. And, you know, as we grow, especially little children, it's building up and it leads into heart diseases, kidney diseases, just numerous of branches. But we really should look into the new way to do that, something possible. So,
I'd like to make a comment related to your information. The centrifuge is a different than a digester. We have information on digesters, which are the European method. None of you can look at any. They're two different items, so don't confuse the two. The centrifuger is using centrifugal force to clean it.
Exactly. And they're also, Europe is also hooking up an aerobic blender to it. Well, to also in Europe, also try to clarify. But your plasma blend is by far the cleanest.
I don't want to fight with it. The digester is used for generation of electricity and takes on more than biosolids. It uses methane gas as part of it, and they can use all kinds of surplus things from agriculture and things like that. It's not singly used for just that. So,
good information.
Information, different types of things.
Right.
Thank you.
Next, anyone else? Again, for the record, please identify yourself.
Hi, my name is Pete Cowles. I'm a resident of Lincoln County. A volunteer firefighter for Solex, and I'm also a rope technician on the Lincoln County Road Team. I'm an advocate for our environment. Recently took an Oregon Master Natural course to kind of help me tailor my education towards what I was most interested in. And resiliency is really important. And, you know, I'm only 40, or I am 40, so I've seen, I'm a diver, you know, I'm a dive instructor. I teach people to go out and show them nature, and I'm scared. There's been declines all over. And I have a letter to read from my wife. She wasn't able to be here. She's helping the chief. She says, Honorable County Commissioners and select City Council members, thank you for being here tonight and hearing our community's concerns regarding the health and the well-being of the Selets River. As a lifelong resident in Lincoln County and Toledo and Selets areas, I've personally seen our river change in the last 15 years. There's been explosion of algal growth and noticeable decline in aquatic life. This seems to be a direct result of years of biosludge along the Selets River Valley. While residents of Selets and Logsdon can directly see the degradation of the river, the rest of the county seems to turn a blind eye to the issue at hand. It's not right in front of you. It seems that it doesn't affect you. And just wait, you will be affected. It's a countywide issue. We're seeing it up in Lincoln City at the D River, or the D Lake, Thompson River out of the D Lake. You're seeing news from Florida with algal growth killing aquatic life. It's a real thing. This is really happening. We have an opportunity right now. We really do. But if we don't take this opportunity, our children and their children will slap us later. We're at that point. We're past it, actually. While residents of Selets and Logsdon can directly see the degradation of the river, the rest of the county seems to turn a blind eye. That's a countywide issue. Sorry. Respectfully request the City Council, as well as our county commissioners, to please cease and desist the sludge spreading, or help us until further investigation can take place. How can we call ourselves stewards of the land without appropriate environmental regulations or any mitigation plans in place? I've spoken with some environmental impact friends of mine, and he's recommended that we tie this to an aquatic, some aquatic life that's there. And we have test bore pits that are done along the river that we can actually look at and see results of zooplankton and phytoplankton. And we can do controls, upstreams and downstream controls, so that you can see the true effects where it's not being spread and where it has been spread. There's a lot of factors there, but I'm really interested in helping in any way we can. There's a lot of people out there that are. Arm you to help us all be successful. So I want you to know that.
Thank you.
And Allison McGrath wrote this letter.
Allison.
Can we get a copy from the record?
Yes. Pete, could you provide a copy of that, or can you get a copy? If that's your only copy, we'll order it and get it back to you. Thank you. Appreciate the information. Next, anyone else?
No. Sure. I come a long ways to get here.
Hi, I'm Cindy Carr. I live in Walport, and I have been involved for a long time with watershed issues, and biosolids has been one of them. I've worked hard to try to bring this to the attention. I'm really, really glad to see a lot of people bringing it up and bringing it to the councils and to the commissioners. One of the things with the Siletz watershed is too high of nutrition. There's numerous areas that cause it. Biosolids is one of them, we feel. But there's also agriculture that uses fertilizers that can increase the nutrition that ends up into the river. We have timber that fertilizes the timber areas that they've harvested, so that can end up into the river. And the biosolids can also, nobody that I've heard tonight talk about pharmaceuticals ending up. Yes, I know that that has been brought up in the past, but that is a concern. And plants take those up too. And one of the things that I can say is we have an algae bloom, and I don't feel that the water is being tested enough by the municipalities to make sure that it's not a toxic algae bloom. When I talked to John Spangler at ODFNW, he is the regional fish biologist, and he said most of the algae that he encounters in the Siletz River is growing from high nutrition's in the water, but that most of it just absorbs the oxygen. But he also said that can change and you can end up with a toxic algae. I recently worked on Ekman Lake having a toxic algae. It looked like pea soup. And they just did a test on it, and I have not heard the results back on that. But I would rather err on the side of caution and caution to protect the public than err on the side to protect the municipalities that are doing the biosolids. The other thing that I understand is the Class B biosolids have pathogens still left in them. Newport is treating theirs with lye. Lincoln City is sending theirs in through their centrifuge and then sending it over to the Coffin Butte. And I would like to see you banned, which you have tried to do, but nobody's listening, but I'm aware of. I think one thing that you could do to make it immediate is that you make no Class B spreading at all that has pathogens in it. And then that only leaves Newport. So it would considerably decrease it, and it would considerably increase the safety to the public of local wells and local water that is being used by municipalities for a large percentage of the population in Lincoln County. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question of legal counsel in part of Ms. Carp's comments? But, your initial research, Mr. Belmont, on this was a belief that we could not ban application at the local level because of the way legislation is structured, but I know we have our legal interns working in the planning office researching this issue, and what you had said to us at one point was it was still an open question, at least in your mind, whether we could enact some level of more stringent regulation than what's done at the state. Have they been able to bring forward any information yet that would give us any kind of indications on that question? And
we're still continuing to look at that.
Okay.
And again, we've got some issues with state law preemption. One of the things we're doing when we have the summit here is to talk about if we can't do that, then what do we do? What do we need to change in the law to allow us to do the regulation? Mm-hmm. So we're looking at that too.
Anyone else? And again?
I'll make mine quick. John Sullivan, Rock's resident. I have more questions than I have answers. The last time I was able to meet with you gentlemen, I believe there was an agreement that we were going to get all meeting together and have a representative from DEQ so that we could discuss the problems of their monitoring of the biosolid application.
And that's going to be the August 21st meeting.
That is going to be the August 21st meeting?
Yeah. That's going to be part of
that. Absolutely. Part of it. Okay. Secondly, I'm not in the communication linkage, so I don't know what's going on totally. Are you aware that the Siletz Tribal Council did generate a letter?
Yes, we met with them last week, and then that was mentioned.
And are you aware that Toledo, we met with Toledo City Council. Right. Okay. So you can see the amount of concern, and then the question is, what are we going to do about it? And what I'm hearing is that we probably are going to have to go to the state legislature to get final action. My concern is this may be a long time coming, and I was hope you could pursue this in order to get some type of temporary remedial action, such as what suggested, stop the Class B application, or at least have them apply it somewhere outside the celestial watershed, which is detrimental to the majority of the people in the entire county.
Can I suggest those are great questions to pose to the people who are going to be there on the 21st?
Yes. Yeah.
And we've talked about some of those things, and we've suggested and looked at a number of options, and one of the important takeaways from this particular meeting, we'll talk about what are our next steps and alternatives. So that's the great questions to ask at the 21st.
If I sound a little bit agitated, it's because I've been personally working on this over 15 years.
Gotcha.
Right.
You're not the only one that's agitated.
I had a follow-up question for Wayne.
Okay, quickly, please.
I will be very quick. It's my understanding in reading the law that the county has the right to exceed state and federal law if you can show harm. If you can show harm to our citizens in Lincoln County, then we can override their law.
Unfortunately, I don't agree with that, but that's okay. If you want to cite me to case law or anything like that,
why don't you meet with Wayne and
Please send him the citation.
I'll work on that one.
So I'd like to make it before we get out of this meeting.
Do you want to do that now or see if there's anyone else?
Well, go ahead and see if anybody else.
Anyone else? All right. For the record, Betty, please.
Betty Kamikawa, Toledo. I just have two things. Came up just now. There is a difference between Class A and Class B salad, Iowa salads, obviously. Newport's making theirs slightly safer, but not everything is decomposed by lime. Not all of the compounds that they want to see are being removed, and all of, yes, it's killing the pathogens, but all the things, the pharmaceuticals, the cosmetics, the detergents, all the things that we put down our drains are not decomposed by lime. Some of them have to be acidified, and they're not doing that. So they're as safe as they want to think they are. They would, everybody wants to cover their eyes and cover their ears and pretend it's not happening, but it's happening. Now, the reason I came was I wanted to give you these. This is, there's four copies. And I have a few more for the audience while I'm down here.
Betty, can you make sure that Christy gets a copy?
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
This is from 2003, the Source Water Assessment Summary Brochure for City of Siletz. And this was prepared by the DEQ. And the first two paragraphs, the first one is, what is a source water assessment? The source water assessment was recently completed by the Department of Environmental Quality, DEQ, and the Oregon Health Division, OHD, to identify the surface areas and or surface subsurface areas that supply water to the City of Siletz public water system intake and to inventory the potential contaminant sources that may impact the water supply. Why was it completed? The source water assessment was completed to provide information so that the City of Siletz public water system staff operator, consumers, and community citizens can begin developing strategies to protect the source of their drinking water and to minimize future public expenditure for drinking water treatment. The assessment was prepared under the requirements and guidelines of the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act. This was done in 2003. And then, so in here it goes through and it gives or selects, there were at the time 20 possible contamination sources that they identified. Number 16, land application sites. Northeast of intake off Logsden Road, selects. Proximity to sensitive area, within sensitive. Relative risk level, higher, which means it's at the highest level that they've had. And the potential impacts, improper management of sludge and wastewater may impact drinking water. And then the comments was contact indicated at least two sites off Logsden Road where they're applying biosolids. And if they're improperly applying them, which we have evidence that they were improperly applying them because they were within the 200-foot area to the Siletz River, then they've contaminated the river, according to this.
Thank you.
Okay. Good information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
You didn't think I would. Hoping, I'm sure that
right. We're all friends now, but for the record.
King is farming here. Grew up here. Thank you. Cedar Creek, that's where I grew up. That's where I rode my horse in the water. We went down, actually started at Strome Park yesterday. Wasn't sorry, we went with my sister-in-law, Alan's sister, Inez, and her husband. Strome Park looked pretty good. I didn't see any algae, but then that is tide water there. We went up and decided to stop at Cedar Creek. Now this is my home. This is where I went in. No, this is looking at it, it looks beautiful. I don't remember tiring ever. And then I look at the slow water, and there the algae is, and it's thick. And it's all over. And then you know how when the water drops and then the little puddles come, and the life that's usually in the puddles? There's no life. None. There's no water. There's water bugs. The skippers we talked about, there's some of those. There's no living water bugs that I can see swimming in the water. And again, has anybody caught a bullhead? I haven't seen a bullhead in years. So, I just, you know. And then as far as the City of Siletz goes, according to this, and this was May 2018, and this is when we got, receiving stream basin, receiving stream, Siletz River, WRD, Mid-Coast Basin. There's the permit. So I don't know if that's what happens if there's an overflow, or if the water's clean, but that's what it says. Paul Kennedy had told me you had land apply, but he obviously didn't know because you haven't since 2004. So again, the DEQ agent really didn't know what they're doing. So I guess that was it. I just wanted to bring that up, and the algae, and again, for the water safety, if there's anything you can do, because autocrest is coming soon. Newport's still running. Toledo's still running. That proverbial straw. Wins it again. Or has he?
Can make sure Christy gets a copy of that information, please.
Thank you.
What happens when you run half marathons on a sunny day on Saturday? And for me, it takes 2.5 hours.
I would be there if I sent.
You run that, you don't get a sense.
I don't know. You can't run coffee here, can you? You're not going to get a murder. I'll be there tomorrow to see Wayne anyway, so I can just get a coffee for you.
To address the Board of Commissioners.
Alan just walked in.
I apologize for my late arrival.
Your timing's perfect.
Is this my time?
No. Identify yourself for the record, please.
All right. Good evening. My name's Alan Tugician. I co-manage Gibson Farms here in Siletz. And I'm late.
Alan, before you get started,
we're signing a letter.
We're doing some stuff related to the request. So what we're doing is we're sending off a letter to the Drought Council.
Okay.
They're going to sign one today. We'll make sure you get a copy. And then we're going to explore some more and have some discussions with you and with the folks at the Drought Council about the process and what's going on and where things are going before the meeting on August 9th. And if necessary, we can do a declaration at our August 8th meeting.
You still have 5 minutes.
Thank you for that. I might just give my comment anyway.
That's fair.
I worked so hard on it.
They just see what a tough sell we are.
Thank you, members of the commission, Councilor Belmont. Good evening, I'm from the commission. I co-manage Gibson Farms. I came here tonight to draw your attention to persistently dry weather conditions in our county this summer. They're negatively impacting local natural resource industries, stream flows for fish and wildlife habitat, as well as fire conditions. Last weekend, stream flows in the Siletz River reached new historical minimums, breaking the low water record set in the summer of 2015. And the National Weather Service does not currently forecast significant rainfall for the next 10 days. And at Gibson Farms, the lack of precipitation has reduced our forage pasture production this summer. It's hay that was planned for feeding beginning October 15th is being fed this week, actually, to start supplementing dry pastures. Furthermore, irrigation water rights engineered in 1966 have been regulated off by the Oregon Water Resources Department in the Siletz Basin, effective July 20th. And our inability to exercise our water rights to irrigate for 20 acres of blueberry plants is jeopardizing this summer's harvest, which is only about 20% complete. Is expected to last another 4 weeks under normal conditions. So I just asked the commission, as you've done, to consider their criteria for declaring a drought emergency in the county and whether the current expected weather conditions and associated impacts on our agriculture, forestry, and environment might meet those criteria. And as you know, some such declaration may support a decision by our state governor under her authority to declare a drought emergency, which would give us additional flexibility in ensuring that scarce water resources are used as efficiently as possible to mitigate the local impacts of drought. Some federal and state assistance programs are only available to Lincoln County in the context of the drought declaration by the governor. So thank you again for your consideration, and if you do have any questions for us, feel free to contact us.
If you can encourage any other folks who are impacted similar degree to contact us, so the more information we have, I mean, I think information is power, and so thank you for stepping forward on this.
Yeah, we're all in this together, and I haven't been able to reach out to some of my colleagues in other industries in the county. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're aware of.
Yeah, if you do have that opportunity, encourage them to contact us, please.
Thank you. You sent the letter, and this morning it came to a priority. I saw it. Bill saw it. He filled in part of your speech. I filled in part of your speech, but it sounded about like what you said.
I saw it.
And my brother-in-law Brent sent the email, and he's taking point on this because we were actually quite busy with blueberry harvest.
it was a good letter.
I'll leave a copy of this here, and I'll sign in. And thank you again.
Thank you. Any other constituent input?
Just one little note. A farmer that we happen to talk to at the Lawson store thing, talked to us. He does hay. He goes around and he hays all these fields, and they say that biosolids are supposed to add all these nutrients and increase their volume. Not a difference between the fields with the biosolids and the fields that have none. Not a bale one more, he told me. He's done lots of them.
Thank you. All right. Commissioner Johnson, you said you had a comment?
No, I'm done.
Okay.
Well, I will make one comment, though. I wanted to tell the people, you know, this is one of the frustrating things about government I've been in a long time. But when you get these kinds of meetings, and you get the information, you've got an experienced board who knows how to play this game from the years they've been at it in the legislature, and the system with Wayne Belmont's help will work, but you've got to be patient. It takes time. You got the ball rolling in your direction. What comes out of this meeting is it depends on you and how good a job you deliver your issue and how effective you are in that meeting in a short time frame. And now it boils down to getting that information into that meeting. If you ramble off too much in that meeting, you'll lose your effectiveness. You've got to hit the ball hard because you're going to get the chance to speak in front of a lot of people that need to hear what you've got to say.
Stack of paperwork.
Yeah, and I guess the
one said Toby. Yeah.
I guess the comment I'd make is, to me, it's more than just biosolids. It's an issue.
Oh, it's
water.
It's not the only one.
Well, the whole health of the water.
It's all kinds of things beyond that.
Many aspects beyond.
This could be the canary.
All right. Next meeting of the Board of Commissioners is Wednesday, August 8th at 9:30 a.m. in the Board of Commissioners room in the Lincoln County Courthouse, room 108. We are adjourned.